This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming, to movies, TV shows and pop culture, to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA, with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. By nature, people are social creatures. How will the forced isolation of people due to COVID-19 affect people in the long run? Author of The Courage Habit and life coach Kate Swoboda joins me to speak about the techniques people can use to help cope with the COVID-19 situation and the isolation that comes with it. Thanks for joining me, Kate.
Thanks for having me.
With everybody in isolation right now, people are going to be picking up some good habits, bad habits. What can people do, though, to make sure that they're not picking up any bad habits?
What I think is going on right now is that people who had stronger resilience coping strategies or habits before COVID hit are going to be more adaptable even under the stress of isolation. And they're going to use those habits during their time in isolation. And it's the people who didn't necessarily have some great resilience coping strategies or habits set up for stress before this that we need to be most concerned with, because that's where we're going to see heightened depression, anxiety, difficulty adjusting. And one of the most important tools that I've seen in clinical psychology is the use of something called cognitive reframing or cognitive reappraisal, which is basically taking a sad or an anxious thought and deciding to consciously reframe that thought in the direction of something more hopeful or optimistic. It's not positive affirmations, because it's not going from something that is really difficult to this wildly optimistic, you know, prediction for the future that may or may not happen. It's more like going from, I don't know how our country is going to get through this, to, you know, there's been a lot of times where we've been uncertain about how we're going to get through something, and we always find a way. And people who already have a lot of emotional resilience are doing this automatically out of habit, and people who don't necessarily have as much resilience, or really for anyone who's just really feeling the stress right now, one of the hugest tools that they can use is this tool of cognitive reframing or reappraisal. So reframing what's happening right now as a challenge, but one that we absolutely can get through. And habits are hard when you're first starting them, of course, because you're doing something different that you aren't used to. But as you get more used to doing it, it does become a behavioral default. And you could surprise yourself after 30 days of this by how quickly you end up reframing if it's a habit that you start to put into motion.
Now, one of the things I've known through therapy is that you never want to practice things when there's a fire. So right now, if you're already anxious, you've got a little bit of depression, and you're trying these techniques out, I mean, how can you slowly get into it without it being like overwhelmed?
You take it a little bit at a time, but the technique that I'm specifically referring to with cognitive reframing is actually been studied in clinical work looking at behavioral patterns and behavioral change, and it's been found through narrative therapy, dialectical behavior therapy, acceptance and commitment therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, of course, which some of those therapies all have their basis in, to be effective for helping people to manage depression and anxiety. Particularly with dialectical behavior therapy, which integrates a lot of mindfulness in with the cognitive pieces, that has been tested with a wide variety of different people facing different things, from people who are struggling with eating disorders to people who are struggling with obsessive compulsive or anxiety disorders, to people who have bipolar manic depression. And so with these different populations of people who have been struggling with different things, cognitive reframing and being willing to say, okay, again, it's not just pushing for a positive affirmation and trying to, as I say, throw glitter onto poop, okay? This is an actual strategy to try to take the long view of the current challenge that we're facing, and look around at what's immediate and go, okay, in this moment, what is just one small reframe that I can offer to myself to try to help with this? And so it's about starting small. And I think people get a lot less overwhelmed when they think about just in this moment, what might I reframe, rather than, oh my goodness, I have to suddenly monitor all of my thoughts and do everything differently, anybody would feel overwhelmed by, right? So a lot of permission in there to just take it small, take it one moment at a time, if one day at a time feels like a lot.
Now, a lot of what you're saying, like great advice, I love it. You're hitting a lot of things right on the nail, you know, you're doing great. But my thing is, it's also for people who are self-aware, who understand their own mental limitations and know what they need to work on. What about people who have never really dealt with their depression or their anxiety because they were distracted by everyday normal stuff? Now they're inside. Now they realize like, oh my God, I may not be able to do this. What are some signs that, hey, it's okay, you need to slow down, but you do have an issue?
Well, you know, for me, my, you know, area is not in the realm of diagnosis. So I'm always trying to stay in my lane. And it's like, okay, for sure, if somebody's like, whoa, I am really in a place where I need more support, you know, by all means, please reach out for that additional support. There are a number of hotlines. You know, talk to people in your area for a referral to a therapist who might be willing to do what's called telehealth, which is a phone-based diagnosis or just, you know, getting a sense of what's going on. But the other thing that I will add to this is that I think that there is a great space in here for people not to necessarily try to figure it all out, but to actually look around and just go, what am I noticing? And, you know, you just mentioned a moment ago that often how busy we are and the different pressures that we feel as we're juggling jobs or kids or relationships and trying to, like, you know, manage all the different pieces of our lives, we can get disconnected sometimes from the who we are, what we really want, the things that we most need to move our lives forward. So this can be a time where if somebody hasn't necessarily had that self-awareness before, they can have it now. And the other thing that I would add to that, I think it's important for us to actually remain in touch with our feelings and not pathologize feelings. I am the first to say that I have cried at some point over something almost every day for the past several weeks. And I'm in California where we've been doing shelter in place since approximately May 13th. I forget exactly what day it was. So there's stress with this. And when I say I've cried almost every day, what I'm talking about is like just taking a moment, like, wow, this is really intense, and just crying for 5 minutes and then moving along with my day. And I think that there's a way in which we become adults and we go, well, crying is what children do. And adults are stoic and logical and they just face life head on. And if you can't do that, something's wrong with you. I reject that narrative. I think that we are feeling human beings. We feel things. We are angry at what's happening. We are anxious about what could happen in an uncertain future. We are sad when we see the news stories about loved ones who are dying in isolation and no one can go to visit them in the ICU in their final moments. These are very real things that we're facing. When we give ourselves space to actually feel those things, then I think we open something up to get to clear thinking. So I'm trying to notice for myself, just as an example, where are those spaces where I can just be attentive and present to the things that I'm feeling, give them a bit of an outlet so that it doesn't, you know, get me stuck, get me, you know, feeling just really pent up with emotion, and then I can't think clearly, I'm feeling resentful, I'm feeling more tired. I don't want to be in that kind of a space. So I'm big on, let's just call emotions normal instead of thinking that they're automatically wrong. Now, of course, that has to be taken with a grain of salt. There are absolutely people who, for whom dipping into the emotions is really overwhelming and is too much. In those cases, absolutely do this with support. You know, we can't be in person right now, but there are so many different resources that are out there, from Instagram dance parties that just evoke a lot of joy to, as I mentioned, you know, you can get a lot of referrals for mental health services. And just, you know, this is the time. Call the people you haven't called in a while. You know, really reach out. Listen to the podcasts where people have a really supportive message that grounds you. Take time to meditate. Use an app like the Simple Habit app, which helps you to just get grounded, slow down, be mindful. Because even if you can only do that and get just like 5 minutes of peace, I would still say that 5 minutes of reduced stress is better than no minutes of reduced stress.
Now, there have been reports that the economy is going to end up changing completely once everything goes back to normal. Do you think that people will be prepared for that?
I don't think we're prepared for any of this. You know, this is a really, really, it's a novel virus. It's a novel situation for our lifetime. So are we prepared for it? No. Will we adapt and adjust? Absolutely. And just for some kind of context, some of my perspective on this is informed by the fact that in 2017, I went through the Sonoma County fires, which we, I'm sure, all saw the news footage of. They stopped burning approximately 10 minutes from my house. The state websites in California that are designed to tell people what to do if there's a disaster were totally unprepared for the servers were totally unprepared for the traffic that came in. You couldn't find any information. Nobody knew where the fires were going, which direction they were going in, which evacuation routes or highways or roads were closed. So we were living in a state of you have to stay inside, which is like shelter in place. You can't go outside or you'll breathe in this awful air that could damage your lungs. All of your possessions are like thrown into a car to go at a moment's notice. You know, a bunch of businesses burned down, homes burned down, people are homeless. The local economy was very badly damaged. But what you find is that during times of crisis, people inherently start to self-organize and help one another. And having observed, you know, gone through that process, observed that process, you know, many people have emerged even stronger in many ways. And there's been so much more community commitment to supporting one another and protecting one another. And I think that that is something that we need to keep in mind, that this is new for what we're going through in this generation, but that there are a lot of other situations and circumstances where we have absolutely seen people go through some really heavy stuff and then come back more resilient.
You know, I have a cousin, his name's Danny, and he's a bit of a lone wolf kind of guy. He's always been a bit, you know, always stand by himself. And he's happy with that, never had a problem with it. But now he's really pulling himself away from everybody. And it's really just his defense mechanism popping up. This is how he protects himself. He goes further into his little turtle shell. But what could you do for someone like that? Can you just keep calling them? Just what can you do to support people who are isolating themselves a little bit too much?
I think they have to be in choice, and also the more we can do to just not judge that choice and trust that they're functioning in the best way they can, that is the best that we can do. And of course, if anybody was isolating to a degree where we were concerned about their personal safety in terms of self-harm, that is absolutely something where it's like you got to get a wellness check on that person. But if somebody is isolating and that is just the choice they're making and we are doing the best we can to reach out and we're not holding a space of judgment, I think that's the best that we can do. Other things that I think can be really helpful that I have offered to friends that I've seen other people offer to me, we've probably all been this person for someone else or appreciated someone else who's been this person for us, whenever someone's going through difficulty, is to be an invitation not to even try to dissect the feelings, but to just talk. You know, be that friend who's like, hey, can I just text you, you know, cats who are afraid of cucumber videos from YouTube, you know, just like something to make you laugh, something that has nothing to do with whatever thing you're going through. And I think that that's a really helpful willingness to provide for someone when they're going through anything. If they've had a death in the family, if they've lost a job, like outside of COVID, we need to remember that every single day people experience tragedy. People go through things that are really, really difficult. And life is always fundamentally uncertain, whether we have a pandemic or happening or not. How can we be there for one another and meet people where they are at? So if where someone wants to be met is, I would be willing to talk to you about like Trevor Noah doing the Daily Show on Instagram, basically at this point, and laugh with you about that. But I don't want to talk about COVID. I don't want to talk about what's happening with the numbers. I don't want to talk about the economy. And I don't want to be questioned about whether or not I isolate. You know, hey, let's see if we can meet that person where they're at. Maybe the invitation will come up later for someone to say, I feel a little bit safer to talk about some of what I feel. That's the hope. But, you know, in the interim, we just got to let people be in choice.
I actually have a little email thing, a chain with my sister, and we've been sending memes back and forth. And it's just the silliest thing ever. And I know that right now she's having difficult times because her husband, he's been furloughed. and her kids are at home and she's doing homeschool. But, you know, she's always sending me cat videos, and I thought that was so funny.
Yeah, if anybody needs a laugh, I'm telling you, Cats Afraid of Cucumbers on YouTube. And, you know, there's so much good stuff, you know, happening if you seek it and look for it. We really have to pull ourselves away from the news headlines. And I know that there's a kind of control, a temporary feeling of control that we can feel sometimes. Like, if I know more, then I'll be more equipped. And that can be true to an extent, but we probably don't need to know more 5 to 10 times a day. Knowing more could probably happen maybe once in the morning and once around dinner time.
You know, I've always heard you need 28 days to form a habit. What are some good things that we can do? I mean, we're in self-isolation. What are some good habits that we can start nursing? And, you know, maybe at the end of this, we'll have something really good in our lives.
I love that, the idea that at the end of this, we'll have something good. One of the things I tell people is just imagine if you got 1% better at a skill every single day. After 30 days, you'd be 30% better at that skill. After 60, you'd be 60% better. And after 90 days, you'd be 90% better, almost 100% better, which is great to think about. So the first one I'll talk about would be at what I call accessing the body. So anything that's a mindfulness-based practice, but to me, mindfulness does not have to mean just meditation. If your way of accessing the body is to go for a run or to take a medicine ball and slam it on the ground, you know, these are ways of accessing the body. So something where you're able to get present to what you're feeling. And then another thing that I think would be a great habit at this time would be to learn how to listen without attachment to the things your fear is saying. So listening without attachment is kind of like if you're standing on a street corner and somebody who's very, very drunk comes up to you and starts telling you that you have rainbow hair. Unless you actually do have rainbow hair, you don't suddenly go, wait a second, has my hair suddenly become rainbow? No, of course not. You hear the words that this person is saying, but you don't attach to them as truth. This is a great skill to learn right now, to detach really from fear-based thought. So when fear is saying, you're not going to have any money to pay your mortgage, well, you can't know yet that that's true. So how can you detach from the idea that that absolutely is true? Or let's say you know you don't have enough money to pay your mortgage. You're going to end up out on the street. Well, you don't actually know for sure that that is true. So how can you listen to that thought and then not assign to it a certain amount of power or intensity that ends up dragging you down and just making you feel more anxious? Now, I'm not talking about positive affirmations, and I am not at all suggesting that people should not feel the reality of what they feel. You might need to take some time to cry, to be angry at the situation that you're in, because that's human and that's real. And here we are. We are handed what we are handed, and we have to do something with what we're handed. What I like to advise people to do and what the research indicates is that the more we can do something to just listen without attachment and then, again, moving into a strategy like cognitive reframing, the better. And then last, reaching out is a great habit to develop at this time. How can you get check-ins with people? And they can be short. My own closest friends, we've been doing check-ins with each other where we just go red light, yellow light, green light. So red light, I am in it. I really could use a phone call right now. I am like, spinning in my own fear. Yellow light, I'm not thrilled. I'm not great today, but I'm doing okay. Green light, I am good. So it doesn't have to be an hour-long conversation. It can be a text.
Well, Kate, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
My book is called The Courage Habit, and you can get it on Amazon. And my website is at yourcourageouslife.com.
This has been The Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter @MasonVeraPayne, that's all one word, and don't forget to share the show with your friends.